We greet each one in Jesus' precious name this morning. Again, a privilege to be in God's house and to worship Him. The service thus far has been very inspirational to me, and I hope it has been to you as well. And we trust that God will have more for us in the message as well. I thought we'd look at a character this morning and do more of a character study for the message, looking at the man Daniel. I've called the title, The Sterling Faithfulness of Daniel. The word sterling we don't use a lot, but it means thoroughly excellent. And I thought the word sterling, I chose that because instead of using thoroughly excellent, the thoroughly excellent faithfulness of Daniel, that could have worked too. But Daniel is an amazing man. I've been inspired by him and I'd like to share some of those thoughts with you this morning. Now, one of the things that I need to remind myself of when I look at Old Testament characters that were faithful and just give us a lot of inspiration, I have to continue to tell myself that they were men, or if it was a woman, just like you and I. It's so easy for me to look back and read the story of Daniel and say, well, they just... You know, Daniel was this special man, and he was. And, you know, there just will be no duplicate, and there won't be. But it was still a man that lived a life like you and I, faced challenges like you and I. He breathed air like you and I. He ate and slept, went to bed and got up in the morning. And it was just the life that he lived. And I got to remind myself of that, because what really happened in the book of Daniel, it is a collection of the most severe test that he went through and his responses to them. And he simply wrote a book about that. And then suddenly I put myself in that shoe, in those shoes, and say, okay, Darvin, let's take all the most severe tests that you have faced in your life and let's write a book about your responses to them. And that would be the book of Daniel. Now, it looks a little different, doesn't it? But Daniel was a man that believed in God and had a strong discipline to keep himself on that pathway of faithfulness, the sterling faithfulness of Daniel. I wasn't sure what verse to use as my starting verse or a text, and I don't know that I have one, but one of the thoughts that run throughout Daniel, the book of Daniel, is the sovereignty of God and Daniel's grasp on that. And we'd like to end with that thought in the message this morning, but I'd like to also begin with that. In Daniel chapter 4, verse 17, the middle part of that verse, B, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. And Daniel had a real grasp on that. And this morning, if I want to sum all of Daniel's life up and the strength that he had, it was because he embraced that fact to the nth degree. He realized, he understood, and he believed with all of his heart that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. And he just trusted and rested in the sovereign God in that fact. And again, I just am inspired by that. I would like to turn to the book of Daniel. We're not going to read all of the verses because I'm really going to do an overview of chapters 1 through 6. Too much reading to read in a sermon, I think. But turn to the book of Daniel because we will do some reading there as we go down through the points. And for the children, Daniel, the book of Daniel might be a little hard to find, but the book, it follows right on the heels of Ezekiel. Ezekiel's a pretty big book, so if you page through and you see Ezekiel, just page to the very end and you'll find Daniel there. So this Daniel, the biblical Daniel, was a man of God. He was an Old Testament saint. And one of the thoughts that come to me that it just struck me that Daniel... We don't call Daniel a Christian. Now, was Daniel a Christian? Well, he's a man of God. He's an Old Testament saint. The only reason we don't call him a Christian is because the term Christian only came into use after Christ was born, lived, and died, and rose again. But it's just interesting to me that we don't call Daniel a Christian, because he's an Old Testament saint. But he has all the qualities of a Christian, and he was a man of God. I do not say that to take away from the sterling faithfulness of Daniel, but it's just interesting to me when we talk about people that are faithful today, it's always Christian. But when you go back before Christ, they were Old Testament saints, that they were men of God, righteous, holy men of old. I think the scripture gives that term. And New Testament tells us that Christ's followers were called Christians first at Antioch after Christ had come. Daniel stands out as one of the few Bible characters who left a completely positive example for us to follow. And that's one of the thoughts that led me to the character of Daniel, or to the book of Daniel. I was thinking of who can we look at that lets us there's no flaw in his character. There's no mistake in his life. There's no error that we say, well, he was a good man, but he did do this. We could look at the life of David. Well, he made some serious mistakes. We could look at the life of Samson. He made serious mistakes. And you just go down through a lot of the Old Testament holy men, and there was this choice that they made that was less than ideal, or it was a mistake, or even a sin. We could look at Elijah and what a prophet he was, and a powerful man for God. But, you know, he got discouraged and down. And I'm not putting those men down, but just lifting Daniel out of all of the Old Testament as a man that has left us a completely positive example. I don't read a single thing in the book of Daniel where, well, he made a wrong choice. It was a wrong response. In fact, we'll look at that the men that were after him to betray him and kill him said there was no error to be found. There was no fault to be found in Daniel. What a man of God. Now, and we can say, you know, that, well, maybe Daniel had a perfect life. Maybe things were, no, that is not the case. Daniel was living in less than ideal circumstances, we would say. And number one, he was enduring the consequences of someone else's sin. And I hadn't thought of it in that way before, but as I was reading and studying, the one commentary mentioned that. He was a young man in the time of King Jehoiakim. King Jehoiakim was an unfaithful king of Israel. And so God allowed Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians to come down and to take Israel captive and to have them under their rule, under Babylon's rule, because of the sins of Israel and because of the sins of Jehoiakim. Nothing that Daniel had done. So Daniel was living under the consequences of someone else's sin. Now, I don't know how often that has happened for you, or that you suffered for the consequences of someone else. Maybe it could be in home life situations where maybe there was unfaithfulness on one of your parents or so on, and you somehow bore the burden of that. Or maybe there was a misunderstanding, and again, you, not because of anything you'd done, but just because of the way things lined up, you bore the brunt of that consequence. None of you doing. Daniel was living under that. He lived his entire life under that. And I just think about those less than ideal circumstances that he was living in. And again, I am inspired to be more like Daniel. Number two, he was exiled to Babylon from his homeland as a young man and likely died there in Babylon during the 70 years of Israel's captivity. Detail what I've just mentioned. Thirdly, he had ample opportunity to fall into error, yet he did not. And I don't know that I can really grasp the intensity of the culture that Daniel was placed into. So he came from Israel, where the true God was worshipped, even though they had fallen into sin, and I don't know the extent of that, but enough that God rent the kingdom from them and gave it to the Babylonians. But the intensity of that culture, where in Babylon, God was not recognized. It was a very, very evil culture, very selfish, very, very proud. And he was brought right into the ranks of government. I tried to imagine myself in a similar circumstance, and And even though I can't really grasp it in my mind, it may be something like living and serving in Washington with the politicians. And maybe that doesn't even mirror what Daniel was going through. And so he had the ample opportunity that he had to lose his grasp on God, lose his grasp on the sovereignty of God because of the consequences he was facing of other sin. No church gathering, no going and having his sacrifices there in Jerusalem, sacrifices for his sins, going to the priest in the form of worship that the Old Testament outlined. There was none of that to influence him. Ample opportunity to sin, to fall into error, yet he did not. And I just don't think we can emphasize enough the intensity of his situation. But Daniel paints a portrait of how to serve God faithfully, how to persevere in hope, even with no immediate solutions to the problems that could get us down. You think Daniel had opportunity to pity himself and to allow his situation and his problems to get him down? He had ample opportunity to do that. And I imagine he faced those temptations. So the goal of the message is to observe the fruit of Daniel's faithfulness and aspire to that faithfulness ourselves. Without a doubt, these fruits spring from a heart of gold. And so I don't want us to make the mistake of saying that to just do these things ensures that we are saved. However, it is generally the fruit of being saved and being right with God, and that these fruits spring from that foundation. So I think I have five observations from the life of Daniel, just looking at how he responded to situations and what he did, the fruits. Number one, I observe he had purpose of heart, and that's in 1:8, Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. The purpose of heart. What is purpose of heart? I believe purpose of heart is a settled determination to always do that which is right. He had a purpose, a determination within him. And that determination was founded on the teaching that he had received somewhere. It was the teaching of an holy God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I believe all of those stories and all of that teaching was deep within the heart of Daniel. And so when he was exiled to Babylon, he purposed in his heart, down to the food in which he ate, I will not defile myself. It was a purpose of heart, a settled determination, a chosen course of travel. This is the way in which I will walk, and whatever the consequences are, that's what they will be. If the king chooses to kill me, if I face mockery and derision from all of that, that doesn't matter to me. I have chosen my course of travel, and that course of travel is with God. We began the service this morning as On and On We Walk Together, and I thought of Daniel as we sang that song. On and on we walk together. That is what Daniel did. He walked with God. He purposed in his heart that he would walk with God. The second song we sang was, I'm depending on Jesus. He's depending on me. That was Daniel's purpose of heart. He said, God, I need you. And you're also counting on me. And I'm going here in Babylon, I am going to do what you have asked me to do. His purpose of heart led him to the testimony of his, I guess you would call them enemies, their testimony of his life in 6:4-5. And then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. This is what the purpose of heart did for Daniel. It caused him to live a life and make choices every day in all the details of his life where there was no error or no fault. What a tremendous testimony for the Lord. I believe this purpose of heart gave him a measured response to every challenge. We've all, at least if a book was written on me, there's times that I have reacted to a challenge, reacted to a trial. And in reaction, we generally don't measure the problem or measure our response as we should, and it comes out in a way, or we express it in a way that it should not. But Daniel had a measured response to every challenge. And that's because he had a purpose of heart. His overruling thought, the thought that was an umbrella over his entire life, was I will operate and I will walk and I will talk within the realm of God and God's will. And so that's a challenge to me this morning, to have this purpose of heart that Daniel had. Secondly, I observe his transparent honesty. There's things in life, even as completely honest people, sometimes it's easy not to say everything or to not share all of the truth. As in court, they say, they affirm or swear that they will say the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I see this in Daniel, and I believe this is one of the qualities of his faithfulness, his transparent honesty. And beginning with chapter 1, verse 8 again, when he purposed in his heart, down to his diet. And I see that he was just honest with, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs, whatever his name was, down in 11, to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel. So that was a secondary authority over Daniel. But Daniel just requested of them. And it just seems like his life was a life that was really open. And he said, here's a need. Here's something that I must act upon. And so he just simply goes and he makes his request known. And that is a beautiful thing. I don't know, especially probably as a child, I remember, you know, maybe a parent had our parents had a restriction on us, a punishment of some kind. Maybe you couldn't, because of some wrongdoing we did, our parents said, you can't play any board games for a week or something like that. And so your friends at school said, why don't you come over this weekend and stay at our house in the evening and we'll play games. And this came into your mind. So you remember that this restriction was upon you. And so you said to your friend, no, I don't want to play games. Because there's a certain embarrassment of saying that I'm under punishment and I can't play games. Instead of saying I'm under punishment, I can't play games, we said, no, I don't want to play games. I don't want to play a board game. I'm not interested. Well, you're not interested, that's true, but not because it's your wish. And this can come up into adulthood where we can skirt those types of things, and it's just, and I'm not even saying that's dishonesty. I'm just saying Daniel had a level of transparent honesty that is just excellent. He was unashamed. In fact, it can come into our life today. You have a dietary restriction for whatever purpose. Maybe because of diabetes, or maybe it's a food allergy that you've had, or you just simply don't feel good at something and you know, those things can, and I know what I'm talking about in that. It's just embarrassing to tell people why I can't eat that food. I react to that, or it's not good for my health, the issue that I have going on. It's not, and so we simply say, no, I'm not hungry, or I don't want that, instead of just being right up front and everybody knows where we are. Just a challenge for me in that as well. His transparent honesty, I see again in his interpretation of King Nebuchadnezzar's dream. That is the second dream I'm speaking of in Daniel chapter 4, when the giant tree, King Nebuchadnezzar dreamed of the giant tree. It was growing and there was it was beautiful and had fruit, and the birds dwelt in the boughs thereof, and the beasts of the field dwelt underneath it, and it gave food to them, and so on and so on. But look at the honesty. This just had to be a very difficult thing for Daniel to speak of. Chapter 4, verses 19 through 27. Says in 19, this is after Nebuchadnezzar gave the dream to Daniel, told him of it, and he wanted Daniel to interpret it. Then Daniel, verse 19, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour. He sat there for an hour, I'm picturing in my mind. He was astonished. He was astonished for an hour. And he was troubled because of the interpretation. He didn't know what to say, or he didn't know how to say it, or it bothered him in a lot of ways. And his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream nor the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, and Belteshazzar is Daniel, answered and said, my lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. The tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached into heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And whereas the king saw a watcher and holy one coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field till 7 times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king. This is the decree of the Most High, which is to come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling place shall be with the beasts of the field. Daniel is telling a king, a powerful king, this. And they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump and the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Daniel handed down the interpretation, a negative interpretation for King Nebuchadnezzar. You're going to be driven from men. You're going to lose your kingdom. And you're going to live in the fields as an ox. And you're going to eat grass. And your hair is going to grow long like eagle's feathers. And your fingernails are long like bird's claws. Now, if you read the book of Daniel and just observe King Nebuchadnezzar, he was not a very rational man. And for less than this, he killed many people. For less than saying this, he killed many people. And Daniel, we know, was a wise man. Daniel knew that this could be his portion. To say the truth of the matter, to say what was the true interpretation and its negative impact that was going to be upon the king. But Daniel was just transparently honest. And he said, here it is. And I do take, and I don't have this in a point anywhere, but I do take that Daniel was very gracious with his words. You can read as he approaches, my lord the king, let this message be to your enemies and to them that hate thee. I wish I wouldn't have to tell you this. So I believe he was a man that was very gracious with his words. But nevertheless, it was a very difficult thing to say. And that's a challenge for us today. It's a challenge to say hard things in a nice way. It's a challenge to be a leader and to sit down with people and to say, this is what it looks like to me. This is what it looks like to us. It's difficult for you as laity to sit down with your leader or to a brother and say, this is what it looks like to me. But I think we need to take the challenge from Daniel and be as gracious as we can with our words, but say what we see. say what we think we see. I see his transparent honesty again in the open worship that he acted upon in the face of terrible consequence, and that's in 6:10. That's when his cohorts, those that reigned, or those that were governors and princes and so on with him, tricked King Darius into writing that decree that no one should take a plea or a prayer or ask a petition of any person or God for 30 days. And so that went through without any input from him. They left him out of the picture. But he knew the terrible consequences. If someone was to do that, he was to be thrown into the den of lions. But we see Daniel, it says in chapter 6, verse 10. It says in 9, wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. So now it's signed into law. 30 days. Verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he knew that it was more than talked about. He knew it was signed. He knew it was now law. He went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Transparent honesty. Can't we just think of at least 10 ways to get around the lion's den? If I'd asked for 10 reasons how to get around this, They're probably there. But he didn't look. He didn't entertain those reasons. He didn't entertain. He didn't say, well, for 30 days, surely, you can pull your blinds. You can make it so that no one would see you. Or you could just simply say, you know, God's going to understand. In the circumstances that I'm in, God will be waiting for me at the end of 30 days. We're just going to have an interim here between my time of worship before and after, so we can escape this lion's den. Now, he heard the decree, knew it was signed, and it seems like immediately, in the face of that, transparent honesty in his worship. It just shows his sterling faithfulness to God. Again, challenges are in that for all of us. The third observation I make of his life is he was dignified in the face of unfair, unreasonable circumstances. I don't know if dignified is the right word. We could have put honorable in there, and that's what I'm leaning toward. That's the thought that I have, that he was honorable and dignified in the face of these unfair and unreasonable circumstances. And again, remind us that his entire life is in exile because of other sins, okay? And the stirrings that I have faced in my heart and the struggle that I have faced in my heart because of unfair and unreasonable circumstances and suffering for others' wrongdoing. Daniel must have had to work through all of that and had that behind him. And he was living this life in exile in happiness and in joyfulness and in peace because he was so dignified in all of these things. And his measured response, Chapter 2, verses 13 through 16. Chapter 2, 13 through 16. He's under threat of death. Here's where the king had his first dream, and he asked his magicians and so on to come and interpret the dream. And again, here's a very irrational time of King Nebuchadnezzar's life, a very irrational time. And so when the magicians and soothsayers and everything started to, astrologers and sorcerers and the Chaldeans, when they started reasoning with the king, he said, they said, tell us your dream. He said, no, I forgot the dream. You tell me the dream and then you tell me the interpretation. And they started reasoning with him. He said, this is very unreasonable. This isn't possible. And in his irrational state, he became angry. And he said, all right, he said, all of you are dying now. Not only if you can't give me the dream and interpret it, but you're going to die now, because he was getting impatient with them. His anger was kindled against them. So, verses 13, in chapter 2, verse 13, and I only learned this a year or a few ago, that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were also a part of this group of wise men. So they were on the slate to be killed as well. In verse 13, and the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And see, here it says it. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain, even though they had not been asked up to this point to give the dream or interpret it. They were a part of the wise men, that whole group, and Nebuchadnezzar said, just kill all of them. And we're going to start over. But listen to Daniel. He's calm and thoughtful under a death sentence. 14, then Daniel answered. And again, I can just hear the gracious words coming from Daniel. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. So up to this point, Daniel didn't even know what was going on. Arioch said, here's what's going on. Then Daniel went in, and I take from that he went into the king, and desired of the king that he would give him time, and that he would show the king the interpretation. Again, much courage on Daniel's part. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. Calm and thoughtful under a death sentence. Dignified in the face of unfair and unreasonable circumstances. It wasn't reasonable. It wasn't fair what the king had decreed. But Daniel was calm and thoughtful. Again, a challenge for me. Calm and thoughtful under adverse circumstances. I've never been under a death sentence. Probably none of us here have. But we face things that maybe we thought were that bad in our minds. But to be calm and thoughtful. Think it through. Use the wisdom that God gives to find a way. I see, again, this measured response in 6:1. And that's the story of his betrayal. He offered no defense in the face of murderous trickery. I don't find any kind of words there when the other princes and that signed that decree into law that he would get thrown into the den of lions. I don't see any defense for himself. And he's just dignified in the face of that unfair and unreasonable circumstance. And that it's just the sterling faithfulness of Daniel. And I need to reach way up. I need to reach way up to that level of faithfulness and that level of calmness and thoughtfulness. In 6:10, we find that he prayed when he was betrayed. Again, he was dignified. He went to prayer. We read that verse. He signed the decree. The king did, and he went and he prayed. We need to pray, and I have a point on that. I find no words of despair when he was doomed to the lion's den. I find no words of despair. No words of, this is unfair. This is unreasonable. You know, I didn't do anything. I can't believe it's coming to this end. I can't believe it came to this. I was thinking when Josh was having his devotions, I was thinking about Daniel as well. 10%, life is 10% of what happens, and 90% is our response. I believe Daniel exercised that point well in his life. The fourth thing I'd like to observe in his life is he was powerful in prayer. Powerful in prayer. I really, really was inspired by chapter 2, verse 17 and 18, we went right up to that again, where that story where the king is looking for his dream and the interpretation, and he went into the king. Now it says in 16 and 17, then Daniel went in and desired the king that he would give him time, that he would show the king the interpretation. Actually, 17 and 18, I think, is what I want. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his companions. He shared it with them. The burden of the day was great. The challenge they were up against was tremendous. It was huge. In verse 18, he told his three friends, and he knows, so now there's four that can pray to God. And in verse 18, this was their purpose, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret. What secret? The dream that the king had, that it would be revealed to them, and they could interpret it. That Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. He was powerful in prayer, and he saw a great need. He gave word out. He gave a prayer request out. And he said, I can't imagine that conversation, but I believe it would have been very sober conversation, very intense conversation. It says, let us pray. Let us desire the mercies of God. And he gathered the friends that he knew were faithful to God. He gathered them together. And it just was a challenge to me. When we're facing a struggle, facing a challenge, facing a trial, to make that call, to share that prayer. Pray. Assist me in prayer. He asked his friends to assist him in prayer. 6:10, that's where he went to his window. His window opened and prayed three times a day. And I learned from that Daniel had a lifestyle of prayer. It was a lifestyle, three times a day, every day, and possibly more. But that was his formal prayer time, three times a day where he went to that window and prayed. So it was a lifestyle. He was powerful in prayer. I believe he prayed in the lion's den. It doesn't give us that detail, but Daniel was a man given to prayer, and he was powerful in prayer. If we want to be powerful with God, we need to be powerful in prayer and beseeching God for his mercies. And we see that God did answer his prayer. The fifth thing we'd like to consider in the life of Daniel is that he was careful to lift God highest in all of life. Now, I see a real humility in Daniel that he endeavored and took action and said things to keep himself out of sight as much as he could. For the wisdom that he had how he was forefront in the kingdom. Still, when things would happen, he would bring God into the picture so that those around him would see God. He was constantly trying to move God to the front and higher so that people would see God instead of himself. We'll look at a few of those in chapter 2, 19 through 23. We see that he blessed and praised God. So he had gone to his friends, asked for their prayer assistance. And then in 19, chapter 2, says, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me how now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. I just love how Daniel's praising and thanking God and blessing God for life. And I just have reason to believe that there were people around him when... I say I have reason to believe. I just believe that. I don't know if I have reason to believe, but knowing the qualities of Daniel, he just was saying those things publicly and in the presence of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were just lifting up the name of God, careful to lift God highest in all of life. He did this same. He lifted God highest in chapter 2, verse 28 and 29, when the success appeared to be his. When he got he had the interpretation, the dream and its interpretation, 28 and 29, he's talking to the king, but he makes sure before he goes too far into it, he makes sure the king knows where this is coming from. He says to King Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, verse 28, but there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon the bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came in thy mind upon thy bed what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. You see God in that passage. And again, he's pointing King Nebuchadnezzar toward God. In chapter 4, verse 27, he makes an appeal to King Nebuchadnezzar in lifting God up. And I think I already read that verse, but I'll read it again. Again, This is the dream where Daniel gave the negative consequences upon Nebuchadnezzar's life. The dream was had a negative connotation, and it was going to affect King Nebuchadnezzar in a negative way. But he says in 20, he makes an appeal, and he lifts God high to King Nebuchadnezzar. Wherefore, verse 27, chapter 4, wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. The word God is not found in that passage, but he's making an appeal to the king to let off, break off thy sin by righteousness. And again, King Nebuchadnezzar was not a rational person. So it took tremendous courage to lift God highest in this circumstance. And then we find in chapter 5, verses 22 and 23, that's the dream of Belshazzar. Or the hand, not the dream, the handwriting on the wall. And again, he interpreted that. But we find this admonishment. 22 of chapter 5. He gave him, talked about the pride of Belshazzar's father, Nebuchadnezzar, coming down through 19, 20, and 21. And in verse 22, he says this to Belshazzar, and thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart. Though thou knewest all of this, you knew what happened to your father when he was lifted up in pride. You know what happened to him. You knew all of this, and yet thou hast not humbled thine heart, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Wow. Again, a king that could have slain him with just a few words to his guards. He was careful to lift God highest in all of life. Again, tremendous challenge in that for me in the circumstances of life, in business. There's those times, and I remember that years ago and when I was bidding lawns and so on, and the thoughts would come to me, you know, if we bring in too much religion or too much of God, it was a temptation that I faced. You know, you could lose a client. What if that's not their kind of talk? What if that's not their kind of walk? And it comes to us in many different ways where we just not sure if we should speak of God at this time because of some personal benefit, something that, or it could be, I say, just fear. But sometimes there's other things involved. We're just not, this could affect my business. If our business will get to be known as religious, I've used the word freaks, it's not professional. See, one of the things in the world they say is in business, you don't talk politics and religion. Remember a man told me that once. He said, I kind of believe that. And so we carry this, and if we want our business to succeed, there can be a temptation in there to not lift God highest in all of our life with our words. Tremendous challenge there for me. So in closing, what was the substance of Daniel's faith in God? So we looked at some of the fruits and how he responded, the measured responses of Daniel. And I believe it sums up in this one point, and there's a lot of fingers to it, but Daniel had a supreme grasp on the sovereignty of God. He had a supreme grasp on the sovereignty of God. He believed that God was painting on a bigger canvas than he could even see. And God had more colors in his array of crayons, in his array of paints, than Daniel could comprehend. And Daniel accepted that. His grasp on the sovereignty of God was supreme. And whether Daniel viewed life as whether the events are good or ill, God cares. And God's still in control. It doesn't mean God's out of control. Supreme grasp on the sovereignty of God. Daniel is teaching me this morning. I hope he's teaching you as well. Teaching us to strengthen our grasp on the sovereignty of God. Shall we pray?